air for Fanfare Racing's NASCAR race review with Hot Topic Sound Off. And tonight we are reviewing the races at Talladega Super Speedway as well as Salem Speedway. So definitely looking forward to a full night tonight as we had all three series racing at Talladega Super Speedway this weekend. Now, in our first half hour, we are going to start with some updates from the ARCA East and West Series. Then we'll review the ARCA Menards Series race at Salem. Next, we're going to review the Truck Series race at Talladega and then the Xfinity and Cup Series race at Talladega, and the latter of which, the Cup Series race, took place just earlier today. Finally, we'll have our NASCAR Hot Topic Sound Off with our Fanfare Racing crew. And joining me for our show tonight is Sal Segala, our co-host. Welcome, Sal.
Oh, thank you, Sharon.
Okay. We're going to get right into the ARCA Menards series here. The ARCA East and West did not race. ARCA East has their champion, and Sammy Smith. The ARCA West has a race coming up at Kerntown, or actually it's All-American Speedway, the Napa Auto Care 150 presented by Burco Redwood will take place on October the 9th at 7 p.m. Pacific Time, and that is 10 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen to the radio at ArcaRacing.com, or you can follow live streaming at NBC Sports Gold Track Pass. The next race for the ARCA Menards series now is going to take place at Kansas Speedway. That is their season finale. The Reese's 150 will take place on October the 23rd, 6 p.m. Central, that's 7 p.m. Eastern, and it will be televised on MAV-TV. So let's go ahead and cover the ARCA West points. I know that they don't race until next weekend. But just so that fans kind of know where the standings are, there, Sal.
Okay, let me get there. I was working on. Go ahead and get them if you can. Sure enough, I was.
Okay.
We have a thunderstorm over here. We haven't had a thunderstorm in a long time, and I'm waiting for the.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
All of a sudden, out of the blue.
All 10 of the top 10, Sal, have raced all 7 races, which is unusual. In the ARCA East, I think there's 2 drivers that have raced all of the races, or in the ARCA Menards, I should say. Starting from the bottom and going up, Bobby Hillis Jr. is in 10th place, followed by Bridget Burgess in 9th. Takuma Koga picks up the 8th spot with Todd Souza in 7th, and Trevor Huddleston topping the bottom 5 in our top 10 here tonight. Trevor is just 23 points back from the lead. Moving on up the list in 5th place is Paul Pedroncelli Jr. He is tied with Joey East, just 15 points back from the lead. Then it's Cole Moore in 3rd place, 14 points back. And in 2nd place is Jake Drew, 7 points back. And Jesse Love holds on to the lead as the defending champion in the ARCA West Series. So he has 2 wins, 4 top 5s, and 5 top 10s in 7 races for the ARCA West so far.
This is the okay, yeah. You know what? Okay. I got kind of twisted
Sal?
Here. Yeah, it's
just okay.
With two. Well, they got the one race this weekend at All American Speedway, and then they got their last race, which will be at Phoenix, which will be the championship race. So 7 points separating the top two. Anything can happen. Especially at All American Speedway, the little quarter mile track, it's known for a lot of wrecks and a lot of aggressive driving.
Right. Well, those top 5 drivers are just 15 points separating the top to the from the top spot to the 5th spot, and Trevor Huddleston is just 23 points back. So I think a lot can happen to change those rankings at All-American Speedway.
Yeah, I think most of it's going to come from Phoenix, where they have the bigger, where they have a bigger car. They'll have a bigger car count than they will of All-American.
Oh yeah.
So I think that's
a good point.
Yeah, so I think that's where you're going to see most of the. You're going to see most of the changes.
Okay. Now, just real quick, there was posted that there's going to be, and you can read this at ArcaRacing.com, Reese's Sweet Move of the Year will be determined by a Twitter fan vote. That's going to be pretty cool. Every race, they have a Sweet Move of the Race sponsored by Reese's, and they're going to take all of the Sweet Moves of the races and put them out there throughout all 33 races on the Arca Menard Series Pro platform in 2021. Fans will have a chance to vote over a two-week period in November and December on the official Arca Twitter page. So the top 32 Reese Sweet Move of the Race Award winners will be seeded into brackets according to their vote totals that they receive from friends who participated throughout the year. And any ties will be awarded to the winner who received the highest percentage of votes. So from November, the winners will then move up to the round of eight, and they'll keep doing this from the end of November, actually from the beginning of November until the final round, which will be on December the 2nd. So definitely you'll want to take a look at this, because this gives fans a chance to vote on what the Sweet Move of the Year is going to be for this Arca Menard Series platform.
Yeah, it's going to be neat, you know, to, you know, do stuff like that, you know, get the fans more involved in, you know, as everybody knows, you know, Arca West and Arca East, it seems like they're dying a slow death. Car counts and just everything that's going on with the series.
Well, we're hoping that's not the case, of course, but we'll have to kind of keep an eye on what happens next season. Hopefully that won't be the case next season, but we'll have to wait and see. Okay, let's go ahead and move over to the recap, Jay, or Sal, of the Arca Menard Series race at Salem Speedway. That is one of the stalwart tracks in the Arca Menard Series. And they ran the Sioux Chief PowerPex 200 presented by Scott County Tourism at Salem Speedway on this weekend. And Jesse Love kind of short-circuited Ty Gibbs' plans for victory.
Yeah, he did. He got one there, snuck that victory off of Ty Gibbs. And, I mean, the season that Ty Gibbs has been having anyways, you know, he should be more than happy with, you know, with the, you know, the finish and, you know, and also, you know, that all the accolades that came along with it. But, yeah, Jesse Love got in there and snuck that win away from him.
He sure did. And then, but Ty Gibbs still had a lot to be happy about, because he also won the Sioux Chief Showdown title that was the season finale for. So he wins that championship after Salem Speedway. So Jesse got the race victory, but Ty Gibbs won that showdown title.
Yes, he did. He won it by a pretty good margin there.
Yes, he did. Do you want to cover those points real quick?
Yeah, I had the
22 points difference.
Is that what it was? Oh, yeah, it was 22, yeah. Ty Gibbs was a champion at 423 points, and then it was Corey Heim, 411, and then it dropped all the way down to Nick Sanchez, who had 360. Other than that, there was only four drivers that really competed the whole season, that competed all 10 races of the season. So, of course, when you go down to Fort, Dad Moffitt, Jesse Love, Taylor Graham, Brad Smith, there's a huge gap coming from those drivers. You know, they're like 111 points away. One of them is almost 200 points away. So it was a good season for Ty Gibbs, you know, to grab the championship. Actually, 6 wins out of 10 starts isn't a bad season.
Not a bad season at all. He, out of the 10 starts, he had 10 top 10s, which is pretty amazing. If to go along with those 6 victories, that's 60% of the races for the Sioux Chief Showdown that Ty Gibbs won. That's a pretty impressive year.
Yeah, it is a really impressive year, especially for it being his first full season out there. And a rookie.
Now,
plus, he got rookie of the year.
And I'll tell you, Ty, the second-place driver, Corey Heim, actually also had 10 top 10s. He had the 2 wins in that group and 7 top 5s out of the group compared to Ty Gibbs' 10 top 5 finishes. So, yeah, it's really Corey Heim had an amazing year. It's just that Ty Gibbs had an almost perfect year.
Yeah, it was close. I mean, if he had picked up the other 4 wins, he would have had a perfect season.
Yes, indeed. Now we'll go over here the final results for the race itself at Salem Speedway. We mentioned that Jesse Love won that race for Venturini Motorsports. He drove the number 15 and finished first. Then it was Ty Gibbs in second place, followed by Roger Carruth with Rev Racing. Great finish for him, finishing in third place. Will Kimmel, he is kind of a veteran, especially of Salem Speedway, came in fourth place, followed by Gracie Trotter, another Venturini car. Gracie driving the number 25 for Venturini, finished in fifth place. Then it was Mason Mingus, Corey Heim, J.R. Bergeron, Cody Swanson, and Kenny Schrader rounding out the top 10 finishers at Salem Speedway. Pretty exciting there.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when you look at all the drivers, you know, when they finished, and, you know, to see, you know, Kenny Schrader, you know, at his age, you know, still be able to get a top 10 in that series, you know, is, you know, I'm sure it's a lot of fun for him to go out there and just to participate.
Yes, indeed. Now, we also want to make sure we cover the standings here, Sal.
The standings are
2 drivers.
Only 2 drivers have competed the whole series, and it was Ty Gibbs. It was the first, Corey Heim at second, Nick Sanchez at third, Dad Moffitt fourth, and Brad Smith round out the top 5.
Yes, indeed. And Ty Gibbs, again, he has 10 wins out of 19 races. 18 of the 19 races are top 5s. That's incredible. In addition to having 10 wins, Ty Gibbs has the 10 pole awards. He has a 2-point average start with an average finish of 3.1. Amazing stats for this young man.
Oh, yeah, it is. And 33-point difference between him and Corey Heim for the series championship.
Yeah, the only 2 drivers that have raced all 19 races. Corey has the 6 wins, 15 top 5s, along with 19 top 10s. So every race he raced in, he finished in the top 10. He has 3 pole awards, an average start of 3.7. with an average finish of 3.1. So they virtually tied for the average finish stat. But, man, this has been a tight competition between these two, but Ty Gibbs is expanding the gap.
Yeah, yes, he is. It's when you look at the game changer in here, it was the 10 wins that Ty Gibbs ended up with over Corey Hines, of 6 wins. That's where the extra points came in at.
Yep. You're absolutely right, Sal. It's been a fun season to watch these two drivers compete in the ARCA Menards Series. And I know we'll have a lot to look forward to. Big congratulations to Ty Gibbs, who won the Sioux Chiefs Showdown Championship at just 18 years old. He won that Sioux Chiefs Championship by the 22 points over Corey Heim. Gibbs led 153 of 200 laps at Toledo. He led 35 of 42 laps at Mid-Ohio Sports Car Course, and he led all but one lap at Iowa Speedway in July. He led only 30 of 205 laps at Winchester Speedway in July, but he followed up that race by leading every lap at the Milwaukee Mile in August. And at Bristol Motor Speedway, he led all but 3 laps. So just an almost perfect year for Ty Gibbs, and I can't wait to see what happens at the season finale at Kansas Speedway on October the 23rd.
Yeah, I'm sure you can almost chalk up another win for him. If not, he'll do what he has to do to make sure and secure that championship,
yes.
Which it's already secured.
That is true. So, and again, Roger Caruth, the 19-year-old rookie from Washington, D.C., had a new career high for Rev Racing, for the Rev Racing driver in his fourth ARCA Menards Series start. So that was impressive for Roger Caruth as well. That's on the heels of finishing third in the ARCA East points this season. Caruth is actually slated to run full-time on the ARCA Menards Series schedule with Rev Racing for next season. So I'm looking forward to watching Roger race.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
I'm wondering if Gracie Trotter is going to be back.
Hard to say. Nobody's really I said anything what their plans are for next season, so I'm sure it's going to be a while.
Yeah, it might be a while, but I can't wait to find out if Gracie's going to be back. I think having the season that she's had this year, I do believe next season is going to be a stronger season for her. So I hope she does return.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll see a lot from her coming up.
I'm sure we will. I know we're a little bit ahead of schedule. I'm going to go ahead and get started because it's just going to help us have the time we need to cover all three series. So let's go ahead and talk about the NECRI series, starting with the truck series. I think it's the first time in history, Sal, that we've had three first-time winners across all three of NASCAR's top series.
Okay. Let me get for sure. I'm sorry. I'm having flashes on my computer screen.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was just saying it's the first time in history that we've had three first-time winners across NASCAR's top three series at the same track. So Tate Fogelman in the number 12 won the Chevy Silverado 250 in the truck series race at Talladega Super Speedway on Saturday afternoon, scoring his very first career series win. Fogelman's truck made contact with the number 4 of John Hunter Nemechek heading toward the checkered flag. Nemechek wrecked as Fogelman edged out number 56 of Tyler Hill to get the victory. Both Fogelman and Hill also wrecked as they slid down the track after crossing the finishing line. Now, the number 56 of Hill finished second over Todd Gilliland, John Hunter Nemechek, Ryan Truex, Corey Roper, Spencer Boyd, Danny Bone, Chase Purdy, and Keith McGee rounds out the top 10. Stage one was won by the pole sitter, the number 99 of Ben Rhodes. He finished 13th. Stage two was won by Sheldon Creed, and he finished in 12th place. Many playoff drivers did have trouble getting caught up in current accidents that are prone to happen at Talladega. Only 15 race trucks finished on the lead lap. There were 23 lead changes among 12 drivers, 6 cautions for 29 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 125.119 miles per hour. Tate Fogelman won the 16th annual Chevy Silverado 250. It was his first victory in 47 Camping World Truck Series starts. Also his first victory in second top 10 finish this year, and his first victory in first top 10 finish in 3 races at Talladega. Tyler Hill posted his first top 10 finish in 2 races at Talladega, and his first top 10 finish this year. Todd Gilliland posted his second top 10 finish in 5 races at Talladega. Chase Purdy was ninth. He was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Your thoughts about the race results, Sal?
Yeah, they were kind of still trying to figure out who that driver is that won the race. couldn't believe it. I mean, I watched it and went back and, you know, once again, you know, Todd Gilliland, you know, put himself in another position, you know, win another race, and for some reason just couldn't, you know, just get it done. You know, then the incident between Matt Crafton and John Hunter Nemechek, I had a laugh when Matt Crafton went up after him and slapped him on the butt, you know, and kind of looked at me like, you know, kid, you know, you got a lot to learn.
Yeah, that was kind of funny. There were several drivers that were caught up in accidents almost half the field. We'll start with the 3 drivers that could not get their repairs taken care of within NASCAR's designated amount of time. That would include Stuart Friesen, Jason White, and Tyler Ankrum. Austin Lane self had an electrical issue that took him out of the race. Jack Wood had an engine problem that took him out of the race. The rest of these drivers that I'm going to list off are all out of the race due to accidents, and it is Talladega, so you expect that. But we're going to start with Grant Enfinger, Clay Greenfield, Haley Deegan, Carson Hocevar, Dylan Lupton. Then it was Johnny Sauter, Jennifer Jo Cobb, Austin Hill, Zane Smith, Tanner Gray, Drew Dowler, Chris Wright, Parker Kligerman, Lawless Allen, Brian Dozak, and that's a lot of drivers that are out of this race based on accidents.
Oh, yeah, it was, it was just like once they started hitting, it seemed like they were never going to stop. It was a crazy chain of events. You know, then
only
once again, you know, Sheldon.
Go ahead.
And once again, Sheldon Creed found himself, you know, he ended up with a good finish, but he found himself, you know, in another bad position again this week, you know. So I guess we'll
exactly
see how these playoff folks look.
John Hunter Nemechek, the only driver to finish in the top 5. No other playoff drivers finished in the top 10. Sheldon Creed, you mentioned, he finished 12th. Ben Rhodes, 13th. Matt Crafton in 14th. Chandler Smith finished 19th. Stuart Friesen, 22nd. And Carson Hocevar finished in 25th place. Zane Smith finished in 33rd. So you know those drivers are not looking forward to this next race at Martinsville, which is going to be the elimination race for the Final Four. Ben Rhodes won that first stage, then it was Sheldon Creed who won the second stage. What an amazing race.
Yeah, it was. I guess when the drivers spoke about, you know, being, you know, part of the, you know, if it was going to be a tough race, you know, it was really a tough race.
It was. And I think Martinsville is going to be a tough race, too. Let's go ahead and cover the series point standings.
All right. The series points is after this race at Talladega, we got John Hunter Nemechek, who is leading the points. Ben Rhodes in second. Matt Crafton's in third. Sheldon Creed is fourth, so that's half the field because there's only eight drivers in the in this round. And then from there, then we
and
go to Stuart Friesen.
Race at Martinsville is what's going to eliminate for these bottom four, perhaps. The bottom four after Martinsville will be eliminated.
Yeah, which is fifth is Stuart Friesen, sixth is Chandler Smith, seventh is Carson Hocevar, and eighth is Zane Smith. Basically, Carson Hocevar and Chandler Smith and Zane Smith are in a must win situation.
They are indeed. It's a really tight points battle. Stuart Friesen right now just 5 points below the cut line. Ben Rhodes just 1 point out of first place. So that's even tight at the top. But when you go down this bottom four, Chandler Smith and Carson Hocevar are separated by just 3 points. And then it's three more points to Zane Smith. So those three drivers are separated by basically 6 points.
Yeah, but even with the points, depending on how everything happens, depending on what happens with the top drivers, it looks like they're going to be in a must-win situation.
Yep, it's going to be interesting. Martinsville is a short track racing at its best, and just like Talladega, or similar to Talladega, nothing's like Talladega. But a lot can happen at Martinsville, and this is all on the line for these eight drivers to make it into the Final Four at Phoenix for the season finale.
Oh yeah, they're all good. They're going to be fighting tooth and nail for the best possible finish, or or the win itself. So it's going to be exciting.
Okay, so we're going to have about 15 minutes each now for the Xfinity and the Cup Series. So let's go ahead and move on to the Xfinity Series. They ran the Sparks 300 at Talladega Super Speedway on Saturday. Brandon Brown beat the darkness at Talladega to score his first Xfinity Series victory. As he crossed the finish line under caution on a dark racetrack, Brandon Brown surrendered to the Amoca's first victory in the NASCAR Xfinity Series. That was pretty fun to watch. When NASCAR declared the Sparks 300 Xfinity Series race at Talladega official with 6 laps remaining, they called it because of darkness. The number 68 of Brandon Brown was ahead of the field, and Brown gave his family-ran Brandon Built Motorsports team its very first victory. NASCAR had to go back to the last scoring line. The field crossed when the caution flew on lap 103 to determine the actual finishing order. Brown was narrowly ahead of Brandon Jones, then it was Justin Allgaier in a three-way battle, and they gave the victory to Brown. Daniel Hemric and Jordan Anderson rounded out the top five. Daytona winner Justin Haley placed sixth, followed by Jeb Burton, Austin Cindric, Josh Berry, Joe Graff Jr. rounds out the top 10. So making the first start of the season for Joe Gibbs Racing in the number 54, John Hunter Nemechek won the opening stage, and the rookie driver, I was so happy to see Blaine Perkins in the number 23 score that second stage win for our motorsports. I was literally cheering for him. So there were 33 lead changes among 17 drivers, 5 cautions for 21 yellow flag laps, and the average speed of the race was 128.486 miles per hour. You had something to say there?
Yeah, it was exciting. A lot of people out here in California were rooting for Blaine when he, especially when he won the, when he picked up that stage when it was wow. I mean, and he ran a smart race. He kept going. He could have probably had a better finish than what he ended up having. We'll get to that when we get to the.
I was so happy for him.
To the finishing order.
Okay, Brandon Brown won the second annual Sparks 300 at Talladega for his very first victory in 115 Xfinity Series starts. It was his first victory and ninth top 10 finish this season, and his first victory and third top 10 finish in 6 races at Talladega. Brandon Jones posted his third top 10 finish in 9 races at Talladega and his 15th top 10 finish this season. Justin Allgaier posted his 7th top 10 finish in 14 races at Talladega. Josh Berry, who finished 9th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. So your thoughts about the race results?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was, I think NASCAR, hopefully they'll realize that when you go to a track with no lights, you either have to start earlier, especially Talladega. I mean, come on. I mean, you know there's going to be wrecks. You know, you either start the race early or you just want to run one race a day because, you know, to not give the Xfinity a chance to finish, you know, because of the darkness. You know, I don't think, you know, it's fair to a lot of the, you know, a lot of the drivers, you know, who could have advanced, especially when you're talking about being in the playoffs. You don't ever want to cut a race short because, you know.
Well, here's the thing that I've heard about Talladega. Here's the thing I've heard about Talladega. I would love for Talladega to have lights, but the only races that run on the big track are the NASCAR races when they come into town. Everybody else races on the dirt track there at Talladega. So to put the lights in there just for the NASCAR races is awfully expensive because that is a mammoth track, and it would take a fortune to put lights around that track. So your point, Sal, they've got to think about maybe starting these races a little bit earlier in the day because, and I know they try to run them at a time of day that will incorporate the West Coast as well because they don't want to lose the West Coast market because they started too early in the day.
Oh, no, I understand that completely. You know what? I mean, that's totally understandable, you know, about the light situation, you know. I mean, you know, it's not, I mean, not really what you say marketing-wise, but, you know, as far as, you know, throwing money away, yeah, you don't want to throw money away on, you know, on lights, you know, that are, you know, a track only uses, you know, twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but what you need to do is you need to schedule these races a little bit different. You know, that as far as and I know, you know, you can only start so early in the morning, but you know, like I said, you know you're gonna have multiple cautions. You got this not only multiple cautions, but you also have, you know, the multiple red flags, you know, because of some of the bigger wrecks and stuff, you know. So, I mean, you know, you got to factor that in, or instead of waiting 2-3 hours in between the race, clean the track off and get the second race started.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now similar to the Truck Series race, there were a lot of accidents in this race. I'm going to cover the drivers that had other issues taking them out. David Starr had an engine issue, as did Landon Castle. That ended their days early. Bailey Curry had a drive shaft issue, taking him out of the race. And this next list of drivers are all drivers that were taken out by accidents. A.J. Allmendinger and Sam Mayer, they had a big accident early in the race. Then it was Mason Massey, C.J. McLaughlin, Ryan Vargas, Cesar Barcarella, Myatt Snyder, Noah Gregson, Jeffrey Earnhardt, Jason White, Riley Earps, who had a really good run going, Brett Moffitt, and Harrison Burton, all taken out by accidents in this race. So four of those drivers, Riley Earps, Noah Gregson, Myatt Snyder, and A.J. Allmendinger, all playoff drivers along with Harrison Burton.
Yeah, it was a I don't know.
That's
I just
the
it was a
drivers.
Yeah. Yeah, except for I know when you start looking up and down, you know, I felt bad for Riley. Riley had a good run and got caught up in somebody else's mess.
He did.
You know.
He did. I was cheering for Riley too. I really think he's starting to come alive. I hope he comes back to the Xfinity Series next year. Because I really want to see him do well in that number 98.
Well, they talked to him. He was really depressed. You know, you know, like you said too, you know, he's in a must-win situation.
Right. Let's
go
ahead and cover the points because, again, I believe it's Martinsville. Four of these drivers will be eliminated out of these 12.
Yeah, and then the points are the points we still have. Austin Cindric leading, Justin Allgaier in second, Daniel Hamrick in third, and A.J. Allmendinger round out the top four. Allmendinger also had gotten a wreck too. You know, that kind of, you know, cost him.
Yep.
You know, that put him in that, you know, in that bubble spot. And then
he went from first to fourth.
Yeah. And then we got Justin Haley in fifth, Brandon Jones in sixth, Noah Gregson in seventh, Harrison Burton in eighth, Jeb Burton in ninth, Mike Snyder in tenth, and Riley Herbst and Jeremy Clements at the bottom of the
to your point, these bottom four have a huge hill to climb. All four need a win at Martinsville, and unfortunately only one of them can actually win. But you know those four drivers are going to be giving it everything they've got. I have to give the edge to Jeb Burton, though, because he has raced really, really well at Martinsville in the past. So we'll have to see what happens. But I give Jeb Burton the best chance out of those four.
Yeah, and actually Noah isn't really in – I mean, yeah, he's in a good position, but with another bad finish like he just had at Talladega, that would knock him out of the – that'll also knock him out of the
he's vulnerable for sure.
Yeah.
Actually, Justin Haley, Brandon Jones, Noah Gregson, those guys are all pretty close in points there. The Brandon Jones and Noah Gregson, along with Harrison Burton, they're all vulnerable.
Yeah, they – The Rumble's going to be so far Noah feels that when they talk to him after, he's had, I don't think he's had anything less than a top five finish there, but I mean, anything can happen.
You're right. Anything can happen, and it usually does. We'll have to wait and see. But Martinsville is one of those tracks where you know people are going to leave the track unhappy. Only one driver is really going to be happy after Martinsville. But that's true at just about every track, right?
Yeah. Well, is it Martinsville or is it – no, their next race is the Roval, right?
I don't think that – let me take a look at the schedule. Hold on. I was thinking it was at Martinsville, but let me look. I might have it confused with one of the other series. I don't think they're racing at the Roval.
Yeah,
but I could be wrong.
Because Noah had talked about them going to the Roval.
Oh, okay. Let me take a look at it here. I've got the next race at Martinsville. So, if you look at the schedule. Yeah, Martinsville
okay.
is their next race on October the 30th.
And then after that, then it's the Roval, right?
No, after that is Phoenix. Because they're going to drop four drivers after Martinsville.
I could have sworn Noah said something about Martinsville.
Well, he did. He might have said Martinsville, but not the Roval. Because the Roval is not on their schedule. Hold on, let me look at this. I'm at the trucks. I got to go to the Xfinity.
Okay.
Hold on. Let me go to the Xfinity. Hold on. I hit the wrong. Yeah, okay, they are at the Roval. My bad.
Yeah.
Okay, they are at the Roval. So that's going to be their elimination race at the Roval next week. So the drive for the cure. So it's going to be on the road course. So we'll have to wait and see what happens for the Xfinity series. We know Austin Cindric is really good on these road courses. So it's going to be interesting. It's going to be interesting. But you're right. It's the Roval.
Noah's talking about rebounding.
Oh, at the Roval?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, it's my bad. I hit the wrong link. I thought I hit the Xfinity, but I actually hit the Truck Series. So, my mistake. Okay. So, let's go ahead and move on to the Cup Series. They ran today, Sal, at Talladega Super Speedway. Their race was called for weather from yesterday. They started today, and again, it was called for weather. But these guys, wow, what a race they put on. Bubba Wallace scores a historic triumph in the rain-shortened NASCAR Cup Series race at Talladega. A strong push from Byron Chevrolet turned Justin Allgaier's Camaro sideways as the car thundered through the trioval on lap 56. Allgaier shot up the track into Larson's Hendrick Motorsports Chevrolet, severely damaging the front suspension and the sheet metal on the driver's side of the car. Larson was able to also make minimum speed after a restart on lap 65. The caution for the five-car wreck that crippled Larson's car also encompassed the end of stage one, won by a non-playoff driver, Chris Buescher. Bubba Wallace won the rain-shortened Yellowwood 500 at Talladega Super Speedway on Monday afternoon for his first career win. Then it was Keselowski in second, Logano and Kurt Busch in third. No, I'm sorry, Logano third, Kurt Busch fourth, and Bell rounding out the top five. The next five were Chris Buescher, the pole sitter Denny Hamlin, Kevin Harvick, Eric Jones, and Anthony Alfredo. Wallace took the lead on lap 113 and was in front of the field when an accident on lap 116 put the race under caution. The rain started to fall shortly thereafter, and NASCAR threw the red flag on lap 117. Rain continued, and NASCAR called the race about a half hour later when they did not have time to dry the track before darkness. There was also an 18-minute red flag on lap 74 to dry the track after a brief rain shower in turns 1 and 2. Several playoff drivers had tough days. Kyle Larson was caught in an accident just before the end of stage 1. He finished 37th. An accident on lap 98 collected three playoff drivers, including Kyle Busch, Martin Truex Jr., and Alex Bowman. Bowman was unable to continue. He ended up finishing in 38th. William Byron also caught up in a wreck on lap 116 just before the rain started. He finished in 36th. Stage 1 again was won by Chris Buescher. There were 35 lead changes among 19 drivers, 5 cautions for 26 yellow flag laps. The average speed of the race was 130.218 miles per hour. Bubba Wallace won the 53rd annual Yellowwood 500 for his first victory in 144 Cup Series starts. It was his first victory and third top 10 finish this year, his first victory and first top 10 finish at Talladega. Keselowski posted his 13th top 10 finish in 27 races at Talladega, and it's his 14th top 10 finish this year. Logano posted his 11th top 10 finish in 27 races at Talladega, and Anthony Alfredo, who finished 10th, was the highest finishing rookie of the race. Denny Hamlin, well, we'll talk about Denny Hamlin here in a moment, but this was indeed the first time in history that there has been a first-time winner from all three series in a single weekend at the same track. That's amazing, Sal, that we had first-time winners in all three of NASCAR series. But I want to get your thoughts about the race results.
Yeah, you know what? I mean, it is what it is. I mean, sure, there ain't too many people, you know, that were happy with the, you know, with the outcome. But, you know, at least NASCAR did try to dry the track. You know, you got to give them that. It's not like they just, you know, Bubba Wallace crossed the line. You know, they brought him in and said, okay, you know what? You know, 15, 20 minutes later, you know, let's go to call the race. You know, they did try to get out there and dry the track. But then when the rains came, they had, well, I mean, what were they going to do? I mean, it gets dark by, they said 6:30. The track would have been probably dried. If that second rain wouldn't have came, I think they would have been able to dry it in time. But when that second rain came, you know, you had to call the race. You know, you had to get give the teams a chance to, you know, to load up. You know, and plus, you know, all the post race stuff. You know, the TV had to take care of. So, you know, it was just a matter of, them having to do as they had to do. I have my opinions on, you know, the way they said he made history when, I mean, come on. I mean, the history was already made with Wendell Scott. You know, you don't make history twice. I'm sorry. You know, you make it once. It was already done. You know, it was already a done deal, you know, just like, you know, but, you know.
Yeah, but look either at way, the you time know, span between the first time and the second time.
Oh, no, I understand.
It's
that.
A huge time spread there. So
it doesn't
we're
matter.
About
I mean,
two
history,
entirely different eras of racing.
Yeah, no, history is history. I mean, you know, just like, you know, Jimmy Johnson won 7 championships, Richard Petty was the first one, you know, and they didn't make a big deal about Jimmy. You know, they said he won 7, and he needed the 8th to break the record, you know, but, you know, they left
yeah,
it at
but
that, you know. But
he also made history by doing it with a multiple different scenarios that NASCAR put out there. So, you know, he did it with the traditional points. He did it with the chase point system. He did it with the stage point
system.
I mean, exactly. You did it with a lot of different scenarios there. So it is an entirely different system of racing that they have today than what it was when Wendell Scott won his championship.
Yeah, and you know, once again, you know, with no light, you know, I'm sure if they had lights, you know, I'm sure they might have, you know, waited, you know,
yeah.
maybe try to, maybe try to wait out the second rainstorm. You know, they did over here at Auto Club Speedway one year. We had a real bad rainstorm, and they had the track partially dried, and the rain came back down again. And then they didn't even call the race. They waited until the second storm was over. They dried the track. And then when they got the track dry, then when they got the cars out there, then, you know, we got the big rain. Then it had to end because it was already like 9 o'clock at night. But,
right,
you know, he got the win, you know what? And, you know, it, you know, there's nothing you could change about that, you know. And, you know, every team had a chance. All the teams knew the rain was coming. You know,
right.
So, you know, it's not like it was just something that was all of a sudden just thrown at them. You know, hey, you know.
Exactly.
I mean, everybody knew the rain was coming, so everybody's racing. You know, had to start racing. You know, towards the end of that.
That's true.
You know, and you know, it was a big shakeup in the points. You know, as far as you know, who needed
yeah,
to be
let's
where,
cover the points
know.
Here.
Yeah, it was a big
for the Cup Series,
you know,
because there is
yeah.
it's very tight. A lot of drivers are vulnerable right now.
Yeah, and when they kept showing it, you know, it was like you seen Keselowski go from, you know, being in to being out, you know, and then you see Harvick
mm-hmm.
going from being in to being out, you know, Christopher Bell from being in to being out, you know, Chase Elliott
mm-hmm.
from being in to being out, you know, so I mean, you know, I'm sure the Roval is going to bring the same set of scenarios and stuff like that too, but anyways, the way the pointers. The way the points are sitting now is you got Denny Hamlin in first, Kyle Larson in second, who had a really rough day once he got hit, and Joey Logano in third, Brad Keselowski fourth, Martin Truex Jr. fifth, and Ryan Blaney round out the top six. Because there's only 12 drivers.
Yeah, you got Brad Keselowski and Martin Truex tied at 21 points back. And they're just 1 point behind Joey Logano, who's 1 point behind Kyle Larson. So it's super tight in there.
Oh, yeah, it is. It was, I was watching the points going back and forth, you know, and it was, you know, it was pretty crazy, you know, to see, you know, all the drivers that were bouncing in and out, in and out. And then from there, then we go to seventh is Chase
right.
Elliott, eighth is Kyle
okay.
Busch, ninth is Kevin Harvick, 10th Christopher Bell, 11th is William Byron, and 12th is Alex Bowman, who was also part of a wreck that just basically Bell, Byron, and Bowman are all in they're in must-win situations.
Yeah, they really have to get that win at the Charlotte Roval
in order to
make it to the next round.
Yeah, they're in must-win situations, and you know it's going to.
Harvick's not far
you know,
off from that. He's got to have.
Yeah, he's not.
He's 41 points back, depending on what happens
yeah,
to the others.
And for a while there, Harvick was way up there, you know, up in the points, you know, while he was leading early, you know, he led early on in the race. But, you know, you really can't go, you know, by the first half of the race, you know, you have to wait till like the last 10, 15 laps, you know, to actually start seeing, you know, what the different, different race scenarios are going to play out. But
he's just 9 points behind Kyle Busch. And actually,
and
Kyle
Chase
Busch
Elliott.
And Chase Elliott are tied in seventh and eighth.
Yeah, I think if they tied, I think the game the tiebreaker would go to either how would they do
Chase
with Chase Elliott? Chase Elliott and Kyle Busch each have two wins. Harvick doesn't have any. So,
well, the tie is between Chase Elliott and Kyle Busch, who both have two race wins. Then they look at the top fives and the top tens. And I don't have that info here right now, but.
Yeah, I don't see it either. I just see the wins.
Yeah. But, it's whoever has the most top fives in that group between Chase Elliott and Kyle Busch. In this case, I think it's Chase Elliott, and that's why he gets the edge there. But that's pretty close, 9 points between seventh and ninth place. And, again, it's just 6 points behind Blaney, who's in sixth place. So Chase Elliott and Kyle Busch are 6 points behind Blaney. So, and 5 points separate Blaney from the next up guy, who is Martin Truex Jr., and he's tied with Brad Keselowski. I mean, it is just so tight here that anything can happen at the Roval. It's going to be interesting.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, and we're probably going to see, the drivers, once they get to the Roval, we're going to see the
you know who the favorite to win is going to be?
Chase Elliott?
Road Course King. Yeah. The Road Course King is Chase Elliott this year. Unless it's he's got to be the favorite to win at the Charlotte Roval. He's right now seventh. But if he wins, he puts himself into that next stage. And that would push out possibly, we don't know who it's going to push out, because it depends on how these guys finish at the Roval.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how all these different race scenarios play out.
It is indeed. Sal, are you going to be at the racetrack this weekend?
I don't know, probably not. There's nothing. Irwindale's having their championship night. But we already crowned our Pro League champion, but it's just for like the local divisions, like Super Stocks and Legend Cars and stuff like that. So I don't know if I'm gonna go. I might just take another week off and wait until the 23rd for the SRL tour race
and go then. Okay.
Over in,
Well, if you talk to Blaine Perkins and Riley Earps, let those guys know. I was really proud of them this weekend. I know Riley's probably disappointed with his finish, but I thought Blaine Perkins still finished, in 13th place? He still had a really good finish.
Oh, yeah, he still had a good finish. There was a chance that without the darkness, he probably could have moved up a few spots. I'm sure a lot of those drivers back there were just waiting, for the last, but then, like I said, it didn't materialize.
Well, I was on my feet cheering for the both of them, especially for that stage win. And Blaine came through, so I was really, really happy for him.
Yeah, he was. His dad was happy. I texted his dad right after it happened.
He was thrilled. Yep.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Well, we're going to have to let you go, Sal. We're coming up on our Hot Topic Sound Off segment. You're welcome to join us.
Oh, I can't tonight, Sharon. I'm still kind of under the weather on this COVID thing,
It's always an open invitation, just so you know.
Okay.
And I hope you do get start feeling better. I know it takes a while to kind of recover from that, so hang in there.
Oh yeah, I am. That's why I'm taking it easy and not really doing much. And I haven't really gone anywhere and just kind of stayed around the house.
Okay. Well, we'll talk to you next Monday night, Sal. Take care and have a good one.
All right. Everybody have a good weekend. Stay safe. And we'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Take care now.
Okay.
Okay. We are at the bottom of the half hour here, and it is now time for our NAFTA Hot Topic Sound Off, and our whole Fan for Racing crew is here for our discussion. Let's see, Andy's here. So, Andy, you are the co-host for Hot Topics. We'll start with you. Welcome to the show.
How's it going, Sharon? How are you guys doing tonight?
Doing really well. I know you guys had some fun out there at Talladega today. Jay, were you able to get out there?
No, I was going to ask that. I was like, I didn't make it out there, so I watched the race and am dry. I don't know about Andy and Mike and Tommy.
Okay, well, Mike, are you dried out yet from the rain there?
Oh, I've got a big sunburned and simultaneously soaked big hay-o for everybody.
Okay. Okay, so thanks for the picture you guys posted. That was awesome to see. And it was great that you guys had a chance to all meet each other. But we're ready for Hot Topic Sound Off. Jay, I'm going to have you kick it off here with an update on our points for fantasy racing.
Yeah,
all right.
We need to do that after this weekend. We could probably skip it, right?
Yeah. There's definitely some big updates to give here. Try and get these pulled up here, and then I'll give some stats.
I'm hurting in the truck series.
Yeah, for the truck series, Mike is now the leader at 101. Andy and myself are tied at 99. Sharon's at 98. Sam at 92. Owen at 75. Tommy at 70. And James at 66. And with two races left, James can no longer win it. He'd come up three short if he got max points and the top guy got zero. Tommy is 1 point from being eliminated, and Owen 6. But the rest of us are within 9 points with two races remaining, 32 points available. So on the Xfinity, I have a 4-point lead over Andy, 130 to 126, Sam at 117, Mike 105, Sharon 99, Tommy 93, James and Owen tied at 89, so there, nobody has been eliminated. 80 points still available, and James and Owen being tied at 89 have a 39-point margin to play with over the next five races. Then, on the Cup side, why is that one not sorted? Oh, yeah, it is. Okay. Owen is stretching out the lead here. Might be the biggest we've seen, especially on the Cup side. He's at 175. I'm at 163, Sharon 159, Sam 154, Mike at 150 even, James 131, and Tommy 125. Andy, I got some bad news. You and Chase Briscoe have been eliminated. You're already 13 points short of possibly even getting it. Tommy and James are about 30 points out from being eliminated. Again, there's five races left there. And that puts the overall, I got a little bit of a lead, 392, Sam 363, Sharon 356, along with Mike, tied at 356, Owen at 339, Andy 307, Tommy 288, and James 286. And there's 192 points. Nobody's been eliminated. There's still 80, or James and Tommy are 86 and 88 points from that. So the only one, the truck series, the only one that we've had an actual elimination yet, I take that back, Andy in the Cup, and then James in the trucks. But other than that, and there's some tight battles there, that has been so cool to see this year.
It is. It is. And again, thank you so much for keeping track of all of that for us, Jay. All right. Andy, I'm going to let you kick us off for the hot topics tonight.
All right. First one kind of stemmed from Saturday. In particular, after the Truck Series race, in between that and the Xfinity Series race, the Talladega track president said that I don't know if it was jokingly or if he was serious, that every vehicle that goes to Victory Lane should wind up destroyed, which I think drew the ire of some of those in the sport. So kind of wanted to see what everyone thought about that.
Okay, that's kind of an interesting comment. Jay, what are your thoughts about that?
I'm sorry, can you say again the quote?
Yeah, basically the track president over the public address system in between the truck and Xfinity races basically addressed the crowd in saying that every vehicle that goes to Victory Lane at Talladega should look like the winning truck, which was Tate Fogelman's truck Saturday, which was effectively destroyed. And I know it drew the ire specifically of Kyle Busch on Twitter. He was kind of upset about that, you know, because I'll give my opinion on it, but I didn't know if anybody had seen that or not.
Yeah, no, I just wanted to reconfirm exactly what you said the quote was. I did not see that. He's playing two sides of the fence there. Yeah, you want to rile up the crowd. We've talked about this. A majority of fans, especially when it comes to super speedways, whether they'll admit it or not, want to see the wrecks. But for him to say that, yeah, I can see where Kyle Busch as a driver and as a team owner is a little frustrated by that. I mean, from the driver aspect, you're talking about safety. From the team owner aspect, you're talking about money and junk, taking home a pile of junk even when you win the race. So what's the profit? You know, I understand, like I said, he was probably just trying to rile up the crowd, play to them, but that's a pretty bold public statement to make because you really don't want to see that. We understand Bristol, a short track, it happens. You know, we've seen that at Bristol with Terry Labonte. Your super speedways, again, survival. Your car is normally banged up a little bit. This one a little bit more so than normal. But to say that you want to see that like that every race, I can see where Kyle is frustrated. And I also understand that, though, that he was just trying to rile the crowd up and play to them.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, like Jay said, I understand the sentiment, and I understand trying to get people riled up and excited for the kind of racing that goes on at Talladega. It's a promotional thing. I get it. But at the same time, I also agree that, especially in the Truck Series and the Xfinity Series, a lot of those teams can't afford to smash up cars and trucks every single weekend, regardless of what racetrack you're at, and even if you're the winner. Especially in the Truck Series. You know, if Rick Hendrick goes and he wrecks all four of his race cars, that's what, $150,000 a pop? So Rick's out $600,000 for a weekend. He probably made that in what they paid him via sponsorship and whatnot. And even then, Rick Hendrick's got deep enough pockets. He can afford it. Versus you go to the back half of the Truck Series, and maybe you're talking about a team that has one or two full-time employees, maybe one or two trucks in total sitting in a two-bay garage. And these are the teams that are putting them together, and they're getting them ready to go to the racetrack. And whether they win or not, they can't afford to total that truck. So I get trying to promote it and whatnot, but we should be really careful about getting too excited about wrecking cars and trucks, especially in the bottom half of the Xfinity Series and the bottom half of the Truck Series, because those teams just can't afford it. And if we're already worried about thin fields here, the way to get the field even thinner is to make it financially unsustainable by wrecking cars all the time.
Yeah, I used to get real upset that the way they promoted NASCAR was by showing the most horrific races they could show. And I saw it today, in fact. You know, they showed the Carl Edwards up in the catch fence. And I just, that's not why I watch racing. It's just not. I know that there are fans out there that love to see the wrecks. I'm not one of those fans. I want to see them on the track racing. I want to see the guys leave their cars safe and sound. I know a lot of these guys are going to be really sore over the next several days. And the toll that it takes on your body going through those kinds of wrecks at those speeds, that's not fun. And I would suggest that the track president get into one of those cars and take a hard hit into the wall and see how he feels afterwards, if he really thinks that is a good idea. It's not a good idea. And I get it, like you guys do. I know he's trying to promote. We're all talking about it, so he's accomplished his goal. but that's not why I watch racing. And I think it was kind of a foolish comment for him to make. Although I do understand where he's coming from as a promoter, it just doesn't suit my sensibilities, if you will. And I'm not in favor of it. So, Andy, I'm curious to know your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much think the same that everyone's already mentioned so far. Racing isn't about the crashes. It's not about wrecking all the time. It's about, especially Talladega and Daytona, it's about, you know, the 3 and 4 wide racing. And the thrill of it is they're on the verge of possibly crashing. But, I mean, I don't necessarily enjoy seeing everyone wreck every other lap either. But specifically to the smaller, you know, less budgeted teams in racing, even, you know, specifically Young's Motorsports, who went to Victory Lane Saturday in that Truck Series race, you know, that's a race vehicle that's probably not going to be that easy to replace, you know. So to imply that, you know, every race vehicle that wins a race at Talladega should be destroyed is pretty absurd, I thought. I do understand that he was trying to get people excited, but, I don't think that seeing, you know, a vehicle wrecked in Victory Lane all the time is what we want to see. We want to see close, hard racing, and you know, specifically for the less budgeted teams, you know, they have to try to reuse those and repair those vehicles if they can, you know, and I'm sure, you know, I felt like it was a bit disrespectful to, you know, a lot of those less budgeted teams in the sport and what it really takes to, you know, put the money into these race teams or, you know, what it takes to field a truck or a car. So, you know, I don't know how long he's been the track president, but, you know, that to me is a kind of comment that comes from somebody that maybe hasn't been around a long time or isn't really that in touch with what it takes to actually field a race vehicle in any of the national series. But not to try to criticize it too much. I mean, he's a track promoter. He's going to do that. He did that. We're talking about it, like you said, Sharon, so mission accomplished. But, yeah, I just thought it wasn't very sensitive to those under-budgeted teams that, you know, work hard to get those trucks or cars on track each weekend.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts in follow-up?
Yeah, two things. You know, we all agree, I understand what he was going for in making the statement, and we can all happen to use the football analogy, I guess, Monday morning quarterback, or Monday afternoon, I guess it was actually, but he could have said it differently. You know, there's a lot of ways you can get a better exciting finish to see somebody, anything can happen. You know, the team of Young Motorsports and driver Tate Fogelman to get that victory. So it could have been said in a different way other than seeing a wrecked vehicle like that in Victory Lane is what he wants. So, you know, and I'm sure they have many people on staff, and with the lashback that's obviously forthcoming, I think that will be coached in some fashion. So, yeah, just saying it a different way of, okay, you can still highlight the excitement of the race. However that excitement came for you, if it was the wrecks, if it was the side-by-side, broaden the category where you're not being specific to that and essentially promoting that. And I think – I don't know which one has the bigger gripe, a driver or an owner. And I know in the case of Kyle Busch, he's both, but we kind of mentioned it. I don't know that Young Motorsports is in that dire need, but it's possible that even as a race winner, they may not be able to go to the next race, you know, that they don't have that kind of funding like you mentioned or whatever. That's possible that, you know, there's a couple of teams we know that they only have one or two trucks, and that's, you know, takes away either their primary or their backup for the next two races. So, yeah, I think you needed to be a little bit more respectful of the other side of it, not just the fan side of it.
Okay, Mike, your follow-up?
Yeah, Jay's right, and it pains me to say it, but it's not so much a statement issue as it's a framing issue. I'm pretty sure that the intention of the statement was we want every driver to try this hard to win this race. We want them to leave everything out there on the track, including parts of their car if they need to, because they want to win Talladega that bad. And I completely agree with that sentiment. But to imply that I want these cars wrecked if they want to get into my victory lane, I think that's where the I don't know if you want to say it's over the line, but that's where the messaging kind of broke down a little bit. So I think saying the same thing framed a little bit differently, I think, is a much more positive and encouraging message versus something that can be taken the way we seem to be taking it, where he says he wants these cars wrecked because it puts on a good show. I think that's the difference here.
Yeah, NASCAR is not a demolition derby and should not be considered a demolition derby. They are expert drivers, some of the best drivers around driving in NASCAR's Premier Series. And I often wonder how the drivers feel about racing at tracks like Talladega and Daytona. I know that there's a storied history behind both of those tracks. But the super speedway racing, we heard in a lot of the post-race interviews how nuts it gets out there on the track. And those are the words that they're using. It's absolutely nuts out there on the track with everybody trying to race for these positions. And I don't know that they really enjoy that type of racing either. I often wonder if it was up to the drivers, would we even race at some of these tracks? Some drivers like that type of racing, and obviously every driver has a chance to win. I like that aspect of it, but Mike's right. It's the framing of how they put that, how somebody should put that, that really makes a difference on how fans are going to perceive what's being said. None of us really cared for the comment, although we kind of know what he was aiming for. None of us really appreciated the comments, and I can't imagine that many of the drivers would appreciate it or team owners would appreciate it if he had to put out that kind of money for those cars, or if, like I said earlier, if he was behind the wheel of one of those cars and his body ached for several days afterwards. Would he feel the same way? And I'm guessing probably not. So, yeah, I don't think it's a good idea. I know what he was aiming for, but I agree. He needed to frame that a lot differently if he wanted a positive response from people. If he's looking for a negative response, he certainly got it. Andy?
I don't have any follow-up, really. I think we've covered it pretty well.
Oh, okay. Let's go to Jay then for the next hot topic.
All right. Well, that's good, because I had one that I really had an issue with, and we kind of talked about it and preluded to it. Justin Haley failed pre-race inspection, in this case due to misplacement or incorrect placement of decals. Because it's Talladega, a super speedway, that affects the aerodynamics. NASCAR penalized them with a pass-through penalty to start the race. So I know we've talked about that, whether NASCAR needs to do more with that. They did do it this weekend for what I found kind of an odd penalty of the decal, but that was their reason for it.
Well, he had two penalties, didn't he? Because he had to start at the back of the line, plus he had to hold on pit road for a lap. So he started a lap down.
Right, yeah, he had to do that pass-through penalty.
Yeah.
Kind of like what we talked about in the last show, like Jay said, we had a little bit of a setup for it, and I think this is a great follow-on. This is the kind of way that teams can be penalized and should be penalized versus just go and take the regular green flag from the rear of the field, which we've seen and we've talked about it being a very little consequence for the majority of these teams. Justin Haley ended up losing a lap because of that pass-through penalty, and it really took him out of contention, especially the beginning part of the race, because he was struggling with being a lap down. That's a real, legitimate, tangible penalty that is difficult for a team to overcome, especially if they don't catch some breaks that go their way. Say, for example, you're on a shorter track, Martinsville, for example, and you've got to do a pass-through penalty under green at the start of the race. It's very difficult to come down pit road at a place like Martinsville or Bristol and not lose at least two laps, even if you don't stop in your pit box. So that's a very real penalty that it can be overcome, but it's going to take a pretty heroic effort and usually some help from others for a team to do it. So having a penalty like that with some teeth to it, I think, is a move in the right direction, and I'd like to see that applied a little bit more broadly for other infractions that merit a penalty if they really feel like, you know, whatever it is the teams are doing merits getting penalized. Well, a pass-through under green is definitely a very legitimate penalty, and a lot more so than starting from the rear or suspending the crew chief, and now he's just calling the race from a hotel room.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't much of a penalty in the grand scheme of things. He finished sixth. So in this case, more probably needs to be done. I don't know exactly what that needs to be, but, you know, maybe it's like a five-lap penalty or something like that, and then you have to spend the whole rest of the race trying to get your way back up there. And I think if anyone could come back from five laps down, that would be pretty impressive. So, yeah, I don't know. Clearly the penalty didn't hurt him very much. You got to give the team some credit for trying. obviously, like Jay said, aerodynamics and making the car as sleek as possible at Talladega is very important, and I'll give the team credit for trying, but clearly it wasn't a very meaningful penalty when you can come back and finish sixth.
Yeah, I have to agree. He still finished good, and I think probably what has to be taken into consideration when thinking about some of these penalties is the situation, the track that they're at, and all of that. But I think it is a step in the right direction. I'm kind of in favor of a graduated penalty. First time you're caught with something in this category or whatever, you're going to get this penalty. Second time you're caught, it's a little bit worse, and third time you're caught, then it's going to be even worse. Now, I know people are going to play with that too, but if you make it across the board, it doesn't matter what the penalty is. If you're caught once, you're going to have this. Caught twice, you're going to have that. Three times, it just keeps getting worse each time that they're caught, in other words. So it minimizes the number of times that these guys make that risk versus reward challenge to NASCAR. And NASCAR's really got to be on their toes to catch these guys, because these guys find some pretty slick ways of getting around the rules. And I got to give them kudos that they caught this one and tried to do something a little more meaty, if you will. But I still think it could go even a little bit further. And I'm all in favor of graduating it based on the number of times that they're caught, the rules. Jay?
All right. And this is going to be funny that Mike and I can rally together with enthusiasm against something and be on the same side.
Mark that one down.
I like the fact. Yeah, there you go, right? Yeah. I like the fact that they did the pass-through. Yes, it's Talladega, but he did need some luck and catch that break. Okay, you can't factor, in my opinion, you can't factor that in, though. I mean, that's no different than when they choose to pit. They're taking that gamble. Caution could come out their lap down.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he really did have to work at it, more so than just starting from the back. Just starting from the back, he might have still been able to get stage 1 point. That did prevent him from doing that. So there is, as Martin Truex said, your penalty, okay? It's costing you the stage points in stage one, possibly. That's where I think, though, that, you know, and I talked about this last time we talked about it, of you got to start actually taking the points. if this is the first time, like you said, Sharon, okay, the pass-through penalty, you got to work your way back and probably catch a lucky break, especially you mentioned Bristol. You're going to be two laps down. You're going to need to race your way back on, get a couple of the free passes or make it alter your pit strategy. Okay, cost you the stage point. Second time you're caught, okay, now we're actually going to physically take a point or two from you in addition to possibly stage points that you might miss out on. So, and I want to be clear. I don't know if they – I'm sure they didn't outright say it, but the decal in the incorrect positioning may or may not have been intentional, may or may not have been done to gain an advantage. We're assuming that, but it's more than likely that it was done intentionally to see what it would do and see if they could get it by NASCAR. That's my opinion. But we don't know for sure that it wasn't an accident or, you know, it didn't get flattened properly by their machine or however they wrapped the car or whatever. But going on the base that it was probably done just to see what would happen, yeah, I think the penalty, and I'm okay with it being a pass-through, even if it's at Talladega. Like Mike said, he went a lap down. He had to catch a break and then work his way from the back to the front. Yes, he came out of it. We know Colleague's got good cars. Justin Haley's a good speedway racer. So he earned that sixth place finish. Had he just been a start from the back, he might have been leading early in the stages and ended up with the win and not six. So.
Okay, Mike.
Right, this is twice in a row I've agreed with Jay, and it really hurts. So I hope you guys understand the sacrifice I'm making here. But, you know, Jay's right. On a graduated penalty system, you've got to have a minor penalty. And, you know, when it's a minor infraction like a sticker out of place, which I don't think anyone can argue that that's any kind of a world-breaking infraction there, you have to have a minor penalty. Right now the minor penalty for most things is start on the rear. That's probably a little bit too minor. So the next level of minor penalty would be something like a pass-through, like what we saw this weekend. And I think that's a fair way to penalize a team. He's starting in a hole, but it's not an insurmountable thing. Versus if you just say, well, we're going to take 10 points from you, period, dot. Well, that's not something that the team can work hard and overcome. I'm not saying that shouldn't be on the table as a potential penalty for some sort of infraction, but for a minor infraction, I don't see why you shouldn't have a penalty that can be overcome. Get your way out of the hole that you got yourself out of. And, you know, like Jay said, the 11 team earned their sixth place finish because, you know, they had some advantageous breaks go their way with how the cautions fell, and they were able to get their lap back. But at the end of the day, the team did well, and they earned their finishing position to overcome the penalty that they got. And I think that's a fair way in both directions. It's a fair consequence for not doing the right thing, but it's also fair to allow the teams to work hard to get themselves back out of the hole that they dug themselves into.
Okay, Andy?
Yeah, no, as far as follow-up goes, I don't really have too much here other than, you know, I don't really know if they should make the penalty more stiffer or not, but I'm not really sure, you know. But obviously he served the penalty that was given to him, and he overcame it and finished sixth. So in my mind, maybe a little bit more needs to be done to make the point to these teams that maybe it's not a good idea to try to, you know, manipulate decals or whatever the case may be. And like Jay said, who knows if it was intentional or not. Whatever the case is, it was deemed illegal, and the penalty really wasn't that severe. So the only thing I can really close this out with is, you know, maybe it needs to be a little bit stiffer to prove the point that maybe it's not worth messing around and making sure that whoever's responsible for making sure the decals are where they're supposed to be, you know, are actually where they're supposed to be.
Yeah, I would just say this. It's a move in the right direction, but I think more needs to be done. And hopefully NASCAR will take a look at that and see what more they can do to penalize these teams with the idea that they stop versus encouraging them to keep on doing illegal things and kind of enabling that behavior. I think the penalty should be a discouragement and not an enabler. Jay?
Well, and I think that's where the elevation factor comes in. You know, the first time in the offhand chance, it was unintentional. It was still illegal and wrong. So, again, Mike said it, a penalty you can overcome. If you work hard, maybe catch that break. You know, somebody threw out earlier of five laps down. Okay, well, then you might as well DQ him, not let him run, because nobody's coming back from five laps down unless you're Awesome Bill from Dawsonville back in the day. And I think that was only three, actually, two or three. So you don't want to make it. If you're going to go that route, then you might as well DQ him from the race and put him at the back from the get-go and not even have him on the track from that aspect. And if it comes to that, again, we've seen it. You take away the win or finishing position if the penalty is that way. Why in pre-race do you get that second, third, fourth chance without what we consider a severe enough penalty? We mentioned it. The crew chief, this day and age, the crew chief not being at the track, not a factor. Even for some of your other teams that maybe don't have quite the setup that some of the bigger teams do, that to have somebody fill in like that for one race really isn't that huge a deal. So it needs to be more than that. And that's where I think they really need to look at the elevating it, you know, per strike.
Okay. Mike, you're up for the next hot topic.
All right. Andy, you ready for this one? Because you know where we're going.
I sure am.
All right. So me and Andy, I'm gonna try and present this without biasing the discussion too much. But Andy and I have been talking about this for a couple weeks in the race day chat, but it really came to a head this weekend of excessive amount of time spent under yellow. It seems like a lot of the yellows the past probably 2 years or so have become progressively longer with a lot less reason why. And I'm curious to know if you guys have, step one, have you noticed it? And step two, what kind of solutions would you think would be appropriate if you have?
Okay, Andy, you're up.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate because especially on a day like today where time was of the essence with weather, there was a lot of just, I hate to say just messing around, but that's what it looked like, you know, just seeing everything that's going on. And you can't always tell on TV what's going on, you know, as far as, you know, the length of these cautions and what's actually taking place. But I agree with Mike. I mean, you know, you hate to be critical, but I mean, my goodness, there was a lot of time spent under yellow that just didn't seem necessary, you know, and obviously I'm not the race director, but, you know, just, you know, trying to get jet dryers into position and trying to, you know, get debris picked up, and they're just, it just didn't seem overly organized, and quite frankly, it seemed to take a long time. And, you know, obviously there's other, you know, it's hard to necessarily compare it to other racing series, but other series have figured out ways to shorten the duration of cautions to get back to the green flag racing. And today's a perfect example. And I think, you know, we really noticed it today because there was a huge incentive to get to lap 94 because based on the weather forecast, I don't know if they would have been racing until Thursday or Friday, which would have been a problem going into this weekend racing in Charlotte. So there's a huge incentive to try to get the race to halfway. And under the caution flags that we observed, there was just a lot of time spent messing around. And that's just my observation. That's my opinion. It's okay if any of you disagree with that. But I would be curious to talk to somebody in race control and find out exactly why things take as long as they do. I'm curious. I want to know, because to me, as the race fan standing there today watching it, it seemed like a lot of time was spent that didn't need to be spent under yellow. So I don't know. It's just it's unfortunate because, and thankfully the race was able to get in today and we don't have to worry about this for the rest of the week, but in my opinion, at the end of the day, just kind of unnecessary time spent under caution, and I'd really like to know why.
Okay, Jay.
Okay, I guess I get to be the one to volunteer to not necessarily disagree with you, Andy, but hopefully provide some insight. But I will disagree with you that Mike doesn't like to be critical, because I disagree with that. But as somebody that's involved, and I am not necessarily the race director, as the announcer, I'm up in the same area as race director and the crew that's taking care of the track. For us at a dirt track, it's a matter of getting the car hooked up or off the track, picking up debris. Okay, on a 3/8-mile track, you can run around with a four-wheeler, pick up the debris, be done. On a 2.5-mile track, it takes longer to check it. And I don't know, I know that you guys mentioned one of the things was the jet dryers, and I believe that was following an accident, if I'm not mistaken. You want the track safe enough to go back racing 190 miles an hour. You're not going to get all the speedy dry up, get it swept clean, but you want it to be safe. So that's one thing. And again, it's a 2.5-mile track. I like the fact, Andy, that you said you'd like to talk to somebody within NASCAR, the race director or that crew, to find out why, and I'm sure they have an answer. Sometimes it is things, and the track I work at in Jackson, there are things where I'm like, hey, this can be done better. We're killing time. But there are some things that just, in our case, you know, not being able to hook up to a car properly, they don't have a bumper that they can hook up to or whatever. Yeah, it bode well for the fans that have to sit there and wait, but that it happens occasionally. So as far as it being an overall trend, I don't know. Talladega, again, I give them the benefit of the doubt, if you will, that they spent the time to make sure the track was prepped and ready to go, so we don't see an immediate repeat caution because of an accident, because a car got slick and slammed the wall.
Okay. Yeah, I think, Jay, you bring up some good points. I was just looking at the cautions for all three series. Truck Series had 6 cautions for 29 yellow flag laps. The Xfinity Series, very similar, 5 cautions for 21 yellow flag laps. And in the Cup Series, it was 5 cautions for 26 yellow flag laps. So all pretty much similar. But I think in addition to what Jay is talking about, there's also the commercial breaks. And NASCAR has to take that into consideration as well, as far as their broadcast partners, because they have an obligation to do X amount of advertisements. And cautions are the best time for them to do those, is during the caution. So in addition to making sure that the track is safe, I think Jay brought up a really good point. They also have to take a look at their broadcast partner and where they are with their commercial commitments, if you will, for the racing. If it's all green flag racing, it's harder to do the commercials. I will say that the split screen has helped a great amount. Having said all of that, I do think that NASCAR has to take a look at it and maybe have a discussion with their broadcast partners on what they can do to streamline those cautions, because there are some cautions that seem to be extremely long. So I get the points that you guys are making, and it's like, what the heck? It seemed like a minor thing for debris, a piece of debris on the track, but it's taking forever to get back to the green flag. And I think a lot of it has to do with the broadcast partners. So as well as making sure that the track is safe. And the bigger the track, the longer it takes for them to review that whole track, to Jay's point. So I get the frustration. I'm equally frustrated with it. But at the same time, I think that there's so many logistics that go into this, and safety is one of those logistics, and I think the broadcast partners is another part of that equation. Mike?
Okay, so you said the truck race ran 29 laps under yellow. And that's not counting the red flag period that took about – for six caution periods, 29 laps total under caution, plus a red flag period. So at a place like Talladega, 2.66 miles at 70 miles an hour, that is 2 minutes per lap. That means for 29 caution laps, the truck series was under yellow for 58 minutes. That's in addition to a 20-minute red flag period. And it's one thing to be frustrated as a fan sitting at home watching TV, wondering, why aren't they going back green? But look at it from the perspective of Tate Fogelman, a underfunded team, doesn't get a lot of TV exposure, but they wasted so much time during that race, during unnecessary extra yellow flag laps and a very slow to finish up red flag period. They wasted so much time during that truck series race that Tate Fogelman didn't even get a post-race interview because their TV slot ran out of time and they had to go to different programming.
That's
a very real consequence that had very negative repercussions for a first-time winner not to be able to even not just get his face on TV to celebrate his win, but you think of the partners that he has on board that truck. They finally break into victory lane with the truck that they supported, and they don't even get to get their logo on TV because that much time got wasted away on unnecessary time under the yellow. And it wasn't just this weekend. This is just, it kind of came to a head this weekend because it negatively affected all three races. You know, we already talked about the Truck Series race not being able to have any post-race interviews. The Xfinity Series race, they had to end the race 5 minutes early because they ran out of daylight. Again, wasting substantial amount of time under yellow and two red flag periods. And what I really think the root cause of this is longtime race director David Hughes retired 2 years ago, and I think his presence is dearly missed on the race control. I'm not sure who's doing race control right now, but I can almost guarantee they're not a presence like David Hughes was. And I think it's a little bit of the inmates running the asylum, and the attitude is, well, it's going to get done when it gets done. And that was not tolerated with David Hughes. If you ever listen to race control on the scanner, whether it be on the mobile app or if you're at the racetrack and you're actually listening to race control scanner, David Hootz would lay the whip across people to get them to move, to get them to get the track ready to go as quickly as possible. And I think that sense of urgency and efficiency has retired with David Hootz, and we need to get it back because it's having very real consequences, both for fans sitting at home as well as the competitors at the racetrack being cheated out of TV time or green flag laps or – in the case of the Cup race today, maybe they – I don't know if they could have gone the full duration with the weather, but they probably could have got an extra 10 or 15 green flag laps had they been a little bit more efficient in how they managed some of the caution periods today.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree with that. You know, I mean, we certainly echoed our frustrations when we were in the heat of the moment earlier too. And I just – you know, I just – like I said, I'd love to know – you know, what goes into the decision-making. And you bring up a good point about TV. Maybe it's coordination between Fox, NBC, and race control. I don't know. Jay, I would like to contradict something you said. You specifically referenced a 2.5-mile racetrack. It's not just there. It's everywhere. So the size of the track doesn't seem to matter. We still have excessive cautions everywhere. So I don't know. Like, I think Mike brings up a really good point that, you know, some of the people making these decisions are probably relatively new, and it may just take some time, you know, to get quicker, to get more efficient in the decision-making, to make things quicker. We all know that David Hootz was in that position for a long time, was really good at that job, did a great job for NASCAR, and things tended to move a little quicker, you know, and whoever's doing it now maybe just needs some time to get quicker at it, you know. And that's, and obviously there's a Cup truck and Xfinity race director, but, you know, the theme tends to be the same across all three series, you know. But, of course, in typical fashion, race fans will always find something to complain of, because instead of throwing red flags in either Xfinity or truck and, you know, to preserve green flag racing, you know, I'm sure we would have complained if it had just ridden around under caution and blown away laps that way too. You know, we always find something to complain about. That's what we do best. And one of the things, you know, I do think in the case, especially some of those wrecks on Saturday, red flags were necessary to preserve the green flag racing we got. But it is interesting to me that both the truck and Xfinity races ran in their allotted time slots, and one of them wound up getting cut short due to darkness because they just plain ran out of time. And, you know, so it is it makes you wonder if, you know, maybe tweaking the times a little bit would help or not. I don't know. But in any event, you know, it'll be interesting to see what happens down the road. But certainly there's always room for improvement and growth, and I think that, you know, things can be streamlined down the road and maybe made to be a little bit quicker. I think to me what was eye-opening this year was a brand-new series, SRX, was able to come in and basically make a caution a 2- or 3-lap ordeal, and that was it, you know. And I don't know how they do that. I'm not sure why. I realize the venues that they race at are different to some degree. We have short tracks. They have short tracks. But I don't know if it's in their officiating or race control or what. But, you know, it's interesting to me that some series can do it quick, some can't. I don't know why that is. Like I said from the onset, it would be cool to sit down and talk to somebody so they can maybe help rationalize why it takes so long. Because it is a bit perplexing to me, especially, like I said, just sitting around today watching it. You know, there was a couple, three times where we really didn't understand why we were under caution when they were.
Okay, Jay, you have a follow-up?
Well, I kind of took a shot at Mike. I will back that up with, I think he brings up a very, as Andy said, an excellent point. I think there may be something to that of David Hoots not being there anymore and whoever is not the same authoritative figure with that motivation. So there probably is some truth to that. So you see that a little bit. But I still think when you're talking about NASCAR Cup cars wrecking at the speeds they're going versus your local dirt track or a smaller track, there just isn't as much to clean up, you know. So I think that you do have to consider that of it is a difference. You can't compare one to the other. Now, are there things that can be improved on? Yes, I would agree with that. Like I said, there's things I know where I work, yes, that can be improved on. I know one thing that was mentioned was the response vehicles or jet dryers being in position and ready to go, taking time to get them lined up to even go out. You know, that's something that, hey, that could have been organized and prepared and ready to go before they were needed. So yes, there are things that can be improved on. And Andy, I know you brought it up. You're right. And I was thinking about that as far as my response of, do you red flag the race or you save the green flag laps? And then you get the complaint that we're sitting here doing nothing. Okay. But if you run them under yellow, then you're burning up green flag laps, just to get to the, appropriate time or, lap time in the allotted window. And I did want to address that. And I don't know that NASCAR has done any straight up TV breaks, as they call it in football, but I hope not. I know there's been some manipulation like with the stage breaks then that they did the interview and did a commercial break then that maybe they do hold them for another lap or two till they come back. I understand that. I understand that's where the money comes from. But also then on the other end, Mike mentioned it, something needs to be done differently when especially you have somebody like he mentioned, Tate Fogelman winning, doesn't get a lot of airtime to not get that victory lane interview. I fully understand the frustration on that. So I think there too, some improvements need to be done to make sure certain things get checked and a team that has earned their victory gets their due time.
Yeah, especially a team like Tate Fogelman's, because his first time win for him, they work so hard, they don't have the resources that a lot of these other teams have. They are due that opportunity to have that celebration on TV. I think it's a shame on NASCAR for that to happen. Now, Sal brought up earlier that he thinks the races need to start earlier. This is a West Coast fan who's saying that the races need to start earlier so that they don't run into the problem with the daytime running out. At this time of the year, you're going to run into that problem earlier in the day than you would in June or in the spring. spring because you just have more daylight for a longer period of time. But I do agree with you guys. I do think it's something that NASCAR needs to look at. There has to be ways that they can improve on it. I think they have to include their broadcast partners in looking for how they can streamline that time. And they have to make sure that they're still doing things that are going to be safe for the drivers. I don't want to sacrifice safety, and I don't think any of you are implying that, but I just want to make sure that we're keeping everybody safe while we're looking for ways to streamline this as well. I do think that there's a lot of other factors that go into it. And I was thinking of Scott Miller. I've seen him at the track and talked to him about being on the radio show, and I think he's open to doing that. It would be good to have him come on the radio show and maybe give us some insights on that as well. So I might reach out to him to see if we can make that happen, if I can still get in touch with him. Mike?
I think kind of the overarching thing here is it's a sense of urgency or lack thereof, and I think that's really what's gone away with David Hoots is that sense of urgency. Andy mentioned SRX about, you know, why are they so much quicker than NASCAR seems to be these days? Well, I think the answer there is Tony Stewart and probably Ray Evernham. Everybody working there, they have buy-in, and they know that if they don't have buy-in to make the show as quick and as efficient as possible, that they're going to hear about it from Tony Stewart afterwards, because Tony is the guy who's going to get in your face, put a finger right on the tip of your nose and tell you that you need to get it together and you need to do your job better. And David Hoots was kind of the same way, and he pushed that sense of urgency. I don't know that there's any one individual specific factor that we can point at and say, this is what's holding everything up and this is what needs to change. I think it's more of a broad sense of urgency kind of thing. You know, just to give an example from today, we'd have the caution come out, and then they'd have almost a full lap under yellow before anybody, aside from the couple trucks that responded just to the accident, before any of the track cleanup guys or anyone would even come out of from the inside pit wall. And then they would do the entire track, regardless of where the accident was, they would do the entire track, blow the whole thing off at walking pace, and then it'd be another lap, maybe two under yellow. After that, the jet dryers and whatever other cleanup crew, after they went back inside pit wall. So now what should be a 2 to 3 lap, so a 3 to 5 minute caution period, has now turned into a 10 to 12 minute caution period for no discernible reason other than people just taking their sweet time doing what they're doing. And the red flag to preserve green flag laps, I think that's a good idea. But the problem is where we run into we saw with the truck race and the Xfinity race this weekend is once that red flag comes out, whatever shred of a sense of urgency that existed before is completely out the window. And then the attitude becomes, well, we're not wasting laps right now, so we're just going to take as much time as we need in order to make the, you know, to do whatever we need to do. And there's really no need to rush. And that seems to be the prevailing perspective of what's going on in terms of getting the track ready to race again is, well, they're under red flag. They've got as much time as they need because we're not burning racing. Well, yeah, but you're burning TV time. You're burning daylight. And both of those became consequences of the amount of time that was spent under red flag during the Truck Series race and the Xfinity Series race. So getting that sense of urgency back, I think, is what is the critical thing that's needed in order to improve the caution process.
Okay, we'll let that be the last word. And Andy, it's your turn.
Yeah, I don't have any follow-up on that one, so should be good.
No, I mean, it's your turn for the next hot topic.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. Looks like Austin Hill said he's not returning to Hattori Racing Enterprises for 2022, so kind of an interesting move, I felt like. I wondered what you guys thought of that.
Okay, Jay?
Well, not real sure what the reasoning is. If it was a sponsorship deal, and we don't always know on that. I will say this. I know that they were a championship team, and Austin Hill has run for the championships but not been winning it or made it to the Final Four. So It's a tough decision, I guess. And I say, not knowing the details as to why, whose side, or what the reasoning is, it's tough to comment on it. I think they made a good pairing and understand that they were in the championship every year but not winning it. And, you know, sometimes that's just not enough.
Okay. Mike?
It's a shame. I mean, like Jay said, Austin Hill has been close but not close enough, it seems like. I haven't heard anything about if he's leaving to go somewhere else or if we're, you know, this is just the last we've seen of Austin Hill. I don't know. Hopefully he does find something. He obviously has the talent, and he's shown that on the racetrack with multiple race wins and playoff appearances and whatnot. But I also don't know what kind of funding he brings to the table, and unfortunately – And this year's current year truck series and the Xfinity series, it's not even so much your ability behind the wheel that matters. It's what kind of funding you bring to the table. And unfortunately, if you don't have that big backer behind you, and I don't know that Austin Hill does, it becomes very difficult to find another ride, especially if it's going to be a lateral move. I don't know that Austin Hill is on anybody's shortlist for an Xfinity series ride. It's going to be a very difficult move to sell himself based on merit alone, especially when his resume is got close, didn't get close enough on several occasions.
Okay. Again, I kind of feel a little disadvantaged because I don't know all the details here, but on a video that I'm watching here where Jamie Little is announcing this, it says that Austin Hill is leaving Ettore Racing Enterprises at the end of the season.
Hey, Sharon,
2022 plans
Sharon,
to be announced.
Check the clock.
Okay, yeah. Okay, thank you, Mike. We are coming up to that part of the night that I need to let especially our first-time listeners know that we are going off the air at exactly 10:30 p.m. Eastern time. We will, however, continue to record the rest of our conversation, so you'll hear us go off while we're still talking. And I want to let you know how you can hear the rest of that conversation after we're done. What I'll do is I'll go out on Twitter, and I'll let everybody know that the podcast is available. And at that point, you can go to the player either at Blog Talk Radio or at FanForRacing.com and just fast forward to the two-hour mark so that you can hear the rest of the conversation. So we didn't want anybody caught by surprise and wondering how do I hear the rest of what they're talking about. That's how it happens. Just watch for my tweet that the podcast is available and then fast forward to the two-hour mark to hear the rest of the conversation. So, yeah, my point being that in making this announcement with Austin Hill, it was also said that his 2022 plans are to be announced later. Now, what's not clear is if that was for Austin Hill's 2022 plans or if that's for Ettore Racing Enterprises' 2022 plans. But Austin Hill obviously leaving. We don't know the details, so it's hard to speculate on what the reason is. It could be his frustration for the season that he had this year. Austin Hill's a championship contending driver, and he's out of the running at this point. So there has to be some frustration for him in that regard. But we know that Ettore Racing Enterprises is also capable of winning championships because they won a championship. You never know if a relationship went sour this year within the organization there or sponsorship. You don't know what it is. So it's hard for us to speculate as to why, but I do hope Austin Hill returns back with racing, hopefully in the truck series. I like him in the truck series. But it'll be fun to hear what the plans are for next year on both accounts, for Austin Hill and for Ettore Racing Enterprises. Andy, what are your thoughts?
It's an interesting move to me. I felt like he'd found a good home there. He's been there for, I believe, 3 seasons now. So it's interesting, you know, that he's going to be moving on. I can only suspect that he might have something else lined up and he has not announced it yet. You know, possibly he's moving up to Xfinity. You know, maybe, I don't know. I have no idea, nor have I seen any rumor of what he's doing, but I did find, you know, that relationship to be good. I felt like they were consistently a playoff truck team. They consistently won or contended to win races. But I suppose every relationship runs its course, and maybe that time had come to an end. I don't know. Obviously, a pretty big disappointment for them to be eliminated after Bristol from the playoffs so early on. That's a team that's gone really deep into the championship, generally speaking, a championship four team. So I have to think that the decision was probably made even before that, so I don't know if that was a factor or not. But, you know, it is interesting to me that, you know, they're going to move on. That's one of those relationships that just seem to work, and I'm not sure exactly why it'll you know, be coming to an end, but you know, that's just how racing is sometimes. You know, drivers and teams need to make changes, and you know, they're going to make a change, and you know, Austin, I have to think, probably has something figured out, and I guess we'll find that out soon enough.
Okay, Jay.
Yeah, having heard that, I would guess that at least Austin Hill has plans moving forward. I think maybe it will be in the Xfinity Series, maybe not with a top-tier team, but time to move on has shown that he can compete for championships, gets the wins, can compete for championships, whether he got it or not. And I think Katori Racing is also going to be okay, because I do think they'll be able to bring in a driver. They've shown they are a championship-contending team, whether it be somebody that new and young that they bring in and give the opportunity to, or I think a veteran that wants to, and Matt DiBenedetto comes to mind, to come in like John Hunter Nemechek did, get in a top ride, go for wins, win a championship to bring his name back into contention for an Xfinity or Cup ride. So I think both of them are going to be okay. I think we'll see them both successful next year. And if I'm not mistaken, Hattori also is going to Xfinity next year, if I recall correctly. So to me, I was kind of thinking that maybe they're like, hey, if we're going to expand, we need to be winning championships to keep the funding and to get the Xfinity Series program moving as well.
Okay, Mike, your follow-up?
Well, I like your optimism. I hope you guys are right that he does have something lined up. The thing that kind of concerns me is usually when there's a I'm not coming back announcement, there's usually some sort of indication of what the future on that is, whether it's good or bad. You know, for example, Matt DiBenedetto, I'm not coming back to the 21. I'm a free agent. Austin Hill is just basically, I'm not coming back, and it's like he's walking into the sunset. And I hope that's not the case. Like you guys said, he's a talented race car driver, and I think he does have a future in the sport if he can find the right ride for him, whether that be in the Truck Series, Xfinity Series, or elsewhere. But definitely it just felt a little off that there was no follow-up of any kind of, you know, hand-tipping of, yeah, I know I've got something. We're putting the final details together before I can announce. There was nothing like that. Maybe that's still to come, and I hope that it is. But it just kind of struck me as a little bit odd the way it happened.
Yeah, like I say, it says 2022 plans to be announced. So I took that to mean for both of those, Austin Hill and Hattori Racing Enterprises. So I think he is going to come back. I don't see him ending it this season in the Truck Series. I do think that he is going to be racing next year. We just have to wait for his announcement to come out. I don't have anything much more to say to that. So, Andy, I'll let you have the last word here.
Yeah, no follow-up on this one. I think we've pretty well covered it.
Yeah, I was kind of scrolling through that. We got so many here. I'm going to scroll all the way up. This is one that I kind of want to talk about, and I'm sure Michael jumped right in. NASCAR could take the charter from the number 51. A lot of talk about charters and how premium they are right now, and RWR has four of them, I believe.
Okay, and you're talking about the number 51 in which series? The Cup Series?
I'm sorry, yeah, that'd be in the Cup Series, and they are in that position of having finished, well, this season not being over yet, so, and the bottom three The rule on the charter was if you finished in the bottom three for three consecutive years, NASCAR could take the charter from you.
Okay, got it. Okay, I just want to make sure we're all on the same page. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, Jay's right. I'm absolutely in favor of them taking that charter away from the 51 car and all the other Rick Ware charters for that matter. They've demonstrated a complete inability to field fast race cars and a lack of desire to do so. There has been no improvement with Rick Ware Racing ever since they got those charters, and it's pretty obvious that Rick Ware Racing's primary business model is to be a charter holding company and field cars just barely sufficient enough to make minimum speed so that they don't lose those charters. And I really hope that that business strategy does come to bite them right on the rear end and they lose a charter because of it, because those Rick Ware cars, by and large, are – they're rolling chicanes every weekend if they're not a danger to the other cars that are out there or the pay drivers who have bought their way into the seat for that weekend to drive the 51, the 53, or the 15. So get those charters to teams that could use them, whether it be 2311, Junior Motorsports, Colleague, any of those other teams that would like to break into the NASCAR Cup Series, but not having a charter makes it very difficult to do so. It's pretty telling that the 37 car from JTG Daugherty has put all three Rick Ware Racing cars to shame combined, and they don't even have a charter on that 37 car, yet JTG is able to consistently field maybe not race-winning cars, but at least respectable cars that can hold their own every weekend, even without a charter and the revenue sharing that comes along with it. So, yes. I think that if you want to run in the back of the NASCAR Cup Series, that's great. But don't take a piece of the pie away from a team that could actually capitalize on it and do very well. And I think that's exactly what Rick Ware Racing is doing right now with those charters.
Okay. It's interesting, too, that the 51 is driven by Cody Ware. The cars that they field are the 51, the 52, and the 53. The 52, of course, is driven by Josh Bowicki, and the 53 is shared between Joey Gase and Garrett Smithley. It's interesting because I have to agree, if they're not in there really competing with the rest of the field, then it's time to do something about it and take that charter away from them. The whole idea of having the charter system was to eliminate the start and park cars. And I'm not saying that Rick Ware Racing is a start and park team, but they're not out there really competing for victories. And they haven't shown any growth toward competing for victories. So I would like to see them kind of make that growth at some point. And kind of take that to the next level. But right now we're just not seeing it. So NASCAR is doing what is part of the rules, part of the agreement of the charter system. And by doing so, they're taking that charter back. I don't know that it's going to be enough to motivate Rick Ware Racing to do a better job. I think that they would probably benefit from going down to a one-car team and doing what JTG is doing, kind of putting their resources behind one car and doing well versus having all of these cars, the 51, the 52, and the 53, which, by the way, is also driven by J.J. Yaley, and they've got the 15 here driven by James Davison. So it just doesn't make sense to have that many cars and not do well. Why not pool your resources into one car that could be really competitive versus spending your money on all these different cars? They shouldn't have that many chargers in my mind. And Andy, I apologize to you. I skipped right over you. So what are your thoughts?
Oh, no, that's okay. No problem. You both bring up some really good points. You know, it's no secret that, you know, there are race teams out there to win races and compete, and there are race teams, you know, that are out there as a business entity, you know, to make money. And, you know, Rick Ware Racing is a team out there to make money, but not necessarily try to win, you know, and that's understandable. I mean, racing is a business. Teams have to go out there and make an income, and that's exactly what that team is. And but at the same time, you know, for NASCAR to take away a charter because of performance, 100% agree with that. I feel like, you know, the more competitive teams we can get, the more people that are out there actually trying to win and put on a show on a weekly basis, that's what we need. So I think it's probably high. Honestly, I'll say exactly what I said to Mike earlier today. It's, you know, probably could stand to take away all four charters, you know. I shouldn't say that. But, I mean, honestly, I don't think it's a bad thing what NASCAR is doing. I think it, you know, it shows that, you know, their interest in getting more competitive teams out there is in their best interest possibly. And that's what we need. You know, and so this is, you know, I don't think it's been announced yet. I think it's just a possibility. But you know, I hate to say, I hope it comes to fruition, but it does, because, you know, charters are hard to come by, and it should be noted that there's a lot of interest in the sport from competitive teams. Colleague Racing, a second 2311 car, the possibility of JR Motorsports moving up to the Cup Series, GMS Racing, these are all entities that intend to compete and try to win races. And I think it would be in NASCAR's best interest to try to help these teams make it to the top level versus a team that has four cars out there that have no intention of running better than 31st on a weekly basis. You know, and I think when you look at the future, we're probably going to see more and more of these more competitive operations come into the sport. So if that's the direction we go, that's good. That's healthy for the sport. That's healthy for the future of the sport. And that is 100% the direction we need to go. So I don't see this as a negative thing at all. I think it's positive. And maybe, you know, it helps bring more competitive teams into the sport and less of the riding around to collect a paycheck.
Okay, Jay, your thoughts.
Well, first, I want to thank Andy for clearing that up. NASCAR has not done it yet. They have that capability. The problem is they've had that capability since the charter plan was instituted. The teams have found ways to manipulate it and work around it by selling and trading and charters and everything, which is why I don't like the charter system from that aspect. I understand the intent behind it, giving the owners a viable asset to sell out when they leave is a good thing. I think it needs to be found a different way. And again, I don't like we want more teams to come into NASCAR, but we're only going to give you four spots to race for because everybody else is locked in. I'm not going to get on that soapbox right now. What I want, though, is, like Andy mentioned, seeing the most competitive teams. And the fact that Rick Ware has, if he's there to make money, has had the opportunity to sell a charter for money. And yet a team found it more viable to entirely buy out another two-car operation than buy his charter. So that's where I think the issue comes in. But this rule has been in place since they started, and I'm trying not to get back on that soapbox, but it's been manipulated. So I think it is time for NASCAR to do something about it, especially as we've seen a lot more interest in the teams Andy mentioned, Junior Motorsports possibly moving up. And there's a couple other hot topics to talk about with that, of ones that are out there that may be moving for next year. So, and I'll end this with a request. Mike, would you tell us how you feel about it? I mean, what are your thoughts really about it?
Okay, so I don't think it's a matter of if Rick Ware Racing downsizes from four to three to two to one cars, they will never be competitive because that's not their intent. They're in a very different business than Joe Gibbs Racing, Hendrick Motorsports, or even a team like JTG, who's not necessarily competing for wins every weekend, but at least they're there to be competitive. Rick Ware Racing is a completely different business that is taking place during the same time and at the same location that a NASCAR Cup Series race happens to be taking place at. And if they want to run their top-level Richard Petty driving experience for rich kids' business model, that's great. Make the field on speed. Don't sit on charters that teams like Dale Earnhardt Jr. or Matt Colleg or Maurice Gallagher can use to field actual competitive race cars with actual competitive drivers who want to go out and win races. And that's my frustration with Rick Ware Racing is they're not an up-and-coming team. They're not a team in development or in growth. They're a mature business model team that is there with the express intention of making money. And I can't hold that part against them, but the part that I can hold against them is they're holding the sport back from growth. When you're looking at a $10 million cost of entry just to purchase a single charter, according to Dale Earnhardt Jr., that's a massive barrier for entry for team owners, potential team owners who want to either break into the sport or expand their operation to be more competitive and put more competitive cars on the field. And part of the reason those charters are so expensive is you have teams like Rick Ware Racing sitting on them and basically using them to run, like I said, a top-level Richard Petty driving experience where guys can buy a seat and a NASCAR Cup Series car for a weekend and go around and LARP as a race car driver for the weekend and post their pictures on Instagram. And that's got to end, especially when you have so many teams who want to get into the sport but can't afford to do it because of the cost of entry.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, I can't really argue the point. You could argue that it's, you know, some of these teams in particular, you know, Rick Ware, we could, you know, his team, you could argue that it's not really Rick Ware Racing, it's Rick Ware Charter Leasing Incorporated or whatever the case may be. But, you know, that is the part of NASCAR that, you know, I think that a lot of fans maybe don't realize is there is, especially with the Xfinity Series and the Truck Series, you know, there is an entirely different business model in which, you know, riding around and just finishing the race is the MO, you know, and it's a business, you know, and I get that. I totally get that. But at the same time, it excites me to see growth within the sport. And when you hear about so much growth on the horizon for the Cup Series, I hate to say this, but the elimination of teams that have no intention to compete at a high level in favor of a team that has every intention to go out there and compete and attempt to win or do the best they can on a weekly basis, that's what you want, because the closer the competition, you know, the better the racing, the better the product, you know, and that's what fans – you know, the fans who spend the money on the tickets, the merchandise, whatever, the customers, if you will, you know, if it appeases them more and gets them more interested in supporting the sport, that's what we need. So I'm all in favor of more competitive teams. I'm more in favor of closer competition. And I think that if you can eliminate teams that have no desire to compete in favor of teams who do have the desire to compete, that's exactly the direction the sport needs to go in. So I'm ever hopeful that we see more and more trend in that direction in the coming years.
Okay. I don't really have much more to add from what you guys are saying. I agree that the short NASCAR needs to take the next step here with these guys, and that's basically it. So I'll go ahead and go to Jay.
Well, you said it right there, Sharon. Well, first off, I want to thank Mike for expressing his opinion and being clear on it. I understand that opinion. The problem is per, and I'll get you with this, Mike, per the rule book, Rick Ware is doing nothing wrong. The issue, as Sharon said, is NASCAR needs to take the next step. They can do something about it based on the rules they have put in effect, to include the 100% rule. You got to give 100%. So that's where I think we're at. Now, if Rick Ware is sitting on him to make some money, again, tried the mark of, and we don't know that that's a truthful fact, but that $10 million mark has been put out there. We know that Colic Racing said, hey, it was cheaper to buy out another two-car operation than to buy Charter. He didn't specifically point to Rick Rare, but we can put the pieces together. So, yes, and that's one where I think NASCAR does need to and make this thing better than it is. I still think that the whole thing needs to be revamped, but they could at least improve on it, and this would be that case. They're in a box where they've manipulated and changed things around enough where they're in a jam now, and there's nothing more they can do about it. I do think NASCAR does need to take it, and like Mike said, we get a better competitive team in there. I do see potential with them. I will say that. I think they need to do it at the Xfinity Series level, not at the Cup top level.
Okay. We might have time for one more. Mike, I think it's your turn. Do you have another topic?
I do, but it's a little deep, and we probably should wait for a little bit more information before we talk about this. So let's table this one until Thursday, and I'll pass to the next guy.
Okay. Andy, that would be you.
And I'll defer to Jay because I think we've covered the big ones. So, Jay, what you got?
Well, I don't know, not sure which one that Mike was passing on. There's three here that I still see. We'll go with one. This one should be fairly quick, I think. Engfinger going full-time now with GMS in 2022.
Okay, Mike, your thoughts about that?
Well, it's great to see Grant Engfinger get a full-time ride. I think he got a raw deal this year. After the performance that he put in last year, making the playoffs, making a very deep run in the playoffs, and then through basically financial reasons, wasn't able to secure a full-time ride, whether it be at Thor Sport or at another competitive race team. I think Grant was kind of on the short end of the stick this year, and it's great to see him get a full-time ride in a competitive truck series team, and I expect some great things out of Grant Enfinger with GMS next year.
Okay, Andy.
Yeah, Jay, thanks for bringing that up. That's actually a really good one that I overlooked. So really happy for Grant and his ability to go to GMS Racing next year. He's one of those guys that has the talent to be there. He's always competitive. He wins races, a championship contender, and he did get a bit of a raw deal this year, in my opinion. Not being able to drive the Thor Sport 98 for the full season. He has run, I think, the majority of the season, also driving the number 9 Chevrolet for CR7 Motorsports, but, it hasn't been the type of season I think he'd been looking for. But just a real good guy, one of those guys you can pull for pretty easily, and for him to go full-time in a GMS entry next year means that we can expect, I think, some good things from him. So, a really good opportunity for him, and certainly was one of those announcements that I think you have to be happy to see.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so happy for Grant Enfinger. He's such a good guy, and to see him get this opportunity for a full-time ride again in the truck series with GMS Racing is all good. I can't think of a guy more deserving than Grant Enfinger, who this year had to basically go out there and work on his own to get his ride every week, and he was able to do that. So it just kind of tells you the kind of person that he is and how dedicated to racing that he is. So couldn't happen to a nicer guy. Jay, your thoughts?
Yeah, I kind of picked this topic for a reason out of the ones we had left here at Fan for Racing. We're a team, even though we may vehemently disagree on some things. This is one I knew we all did. I mean, we all felt like Grant deserved to be in the playoffs this year. And I think he's proven that on the track, even being excluded from the playoffs, that he was still one of the top five, I say, teams that's out there week to week. So I think this is a win-win-win situation for Grant Enfinger, for GMS Racing, and for the Camping World Truck Series to have him back and going for the championship. So great thing all the way around, and good for us to end that on a night here at Fan for Racing.
Definitely so. Mike, did you have any follow-up?
Well, it's going to be interesting to see what GMS does next year, because correct me if I'm wrong, they are the only team next year, at least not that we know of so far, that will have at least one entry in the Truck Series, the Xfinity Series, and the Cup Series. We know Grant Enfinger is going to be driving in the Truck Series. We know Sheldon Creed is going to be driving in the Xfinity Series. And we've heard rumor about Ty Dillon in the Cup Series, but that hasn't been confirmed. So that's a lot of irons in the fire. It's going to be real interesting to watch GMS and see how they manage all three different teams in three different series and how that helps or hinders them in the future.
And Mike, I was going to say that Sheldon Creed entry is actually an RCR entry. I hadn't heard that GMS is going to start up an Xfinity car. Maybe they are, and I missed it. I'm not sure, but I believe Creed's in an RCR car next year. But they are going to have a Cup car, and the rumor is Ty Dillon. I don't think that's been announced yet, but that's kind of the rumor floating around right now. But obviously GMS is staying relevant, you know, with a Cup entry forthcoming and multiple truck entries. Obviously, they have been a mainstay in that series for a while. And, you know, I think this is a really good opportunity for Grant Enfinger to go out there and be a championship contender for sure.
Yeah, I'm really happy. GMS Racing is one of those teams that I've always been impressed with. They've been able to become relevant within NASCAR very quickly as a new startup team several years ago now. But from the time that we've been watching racing, we've watched them grow. And they were on a pretty fast track there for a while. So it is going to be interesting to see how they're able to branch out into the other series, Cup Series in particular, and still remain relevant in the Truck Series. With a driver like Grant Enfinger, though, you gotta think they're going to stay relevant in the Truck Series. And I'll be happy to hear the announcement when they choose to make their announcement about the Cup Series. And I think it would be a good opportunity if it is indeed Ty Dillon. Jay, your follow-up?
Well, Mike, you kind of blew it. I was trying to be all friendly and everything, but then you were going to make me point out you made a mistake. But Andy did it politely as a fellow teammate to just say, hey, I think you're mistaken. Sheldon Creed is going to RCR. GMS shut down their Xfinity program, went back to just truck racing. And the topic I chose not to go with, because I thought it might be a little in-depth, is that possibility, as they are rumored to have the charter. And I didn't want to get into where that charter came from because I'd go on a different direction. So great deal for GMS. It will be interesting to see when they go Cup. That's been rumored for a couple of years now. So I'll leave it at that. I do see good things coming out of it all the way around, though.
Okay. With that, I think we're ready for our roundtable. Andy, we'll start with you.
Yeah, CB14 fan on Twitter, and as always, cool to be on the show. Really cool to do the race with Mike this weekend. Awesome to meet you, and really cool to meet Tommy as well. So fun to, you know, to have a really strong fan for racing presence at the track today, and I'm looking forward to doing that again sometime down the road.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Mike, your roundtable.
Sure, it's Mike_Orzel on Twitter, Mike_O on Reddit. Same thing. Great to meet you, Andy. Same thing for Tommy. I know we didn't have him on the air tonight, but I didn't realize it, but today was his first race ever that he's ever attended in person.
Yes.
I haven't talked to him since we finished the race today, but I'd be real interested to get his impression on not just his first Talladega race, but his first NASCAR race ever, what he thought of the experience at Talladega, and how he's going to measure every other NASCAR experience against that one, because it's really hard to live up to Talladega.
Well, I know he was talking about doing a fan at the track, so hopefully we'll get that from him, and you'll be able to get some of his thoughts there. Jay.
You can follow me on Facebook, Michael Hoosman, Mopar MJ8 on Twitter and Instagram. And I really did want to go over there. I had some other things come up this morning that I just wasn't able to, unfortunately, because, I hadn't met Andy or Tommy. Like Mike said, Tommy said that was his first race ever. Certainly would have been great to be a part of that experience for any fan, let alone one of our Fan for Racing teammates. So that's pretty cool. And see what kind of different perspective that does bring from him overall as well when he's on the show with us as well.
Absolutely. Hopefully he'll be able to come on Thursday night. We'll have to kind of see how that goes. But I'm glad you guys, I take it everybody had a good time from what you guys are saying. And I'm real glad that you sent that picture on Twitter. That was really cool to see. And I'm hoping that Tommy does do that then at the track piece. I am Fan for Racing site on Twitter, Fan for Racing blog and radio everywhere else, including fanforracing.com, where we have all the recaps of the racing from this past weekend, including the Arca Menards Series. Ty Gibbs wrapped up the Sioux Chief Showdown Championship, and Jesse Love had the thrill of his career getting his very first Arca Menards Series win. So that was pretty cool to see as well. And season finales are coming up here. Two more races for the ARCA West, one more race for the ARCA Menards Series, and that's their season finale at Kansas coming up here in October. So a lot to look forward to this Thursday with our preview show. We will be previewing the races at the Charlotte Roval and ARCA West. Oh, they're racing at All American Speedway this weekend. So we'll preview all of those races, and definitely looking forward to that this Thursday night here at Fan for Racing Radio, starting at 8:30 p.m. And of course, our hot topics at 9:30 or 10, depending on how things go here. So probably 10 o'clock on Thursday night. Looking forward to it, and a big shout-out to our listeners for tuning in. We appreciate each and every one of you, whether you're listening to the live broadcast or our podcast. And, of course, to our Fan for Racing crew here tonight, we had Sal Segala, as well as Jay Huseman, Andy Lasky, and Michael Urzel. So thanks, guys, for all that you do. I appreciate you guys, and looking forward to Thursday night's show.
All right, have a great night.
I think we're ready.
Yeah, good night, everybody.
Talk to you Thursday.
Good night, everybody.